FBI.
It's good to have you back on the podcast, RJ.
How's it going?
Over a year now? I can't even remember the last time we hopped on the mic.
I don't remember. Yeah, it's been a while.
Actually, it might have been 2 years ago. It was when you started Root Service, I think.
Yeah, Root Service is 3 years old now. It's crazy.
It's a toddler. No, your little baby.
Three years old.
The family.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah, how has Root Service been? How's everything going over there? Like, just how's everything going in general?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think we're finding a lot of really cool artists that are, even aside from like 3 years ago, like we released Beast Boy's first EP. Like, I think he was our second release on the label, and now he's touring and he's, you know, getting bigger. And I feel like we just keep finding these cool diamonds. Like, have you guys heard of Mirius yet?
No.
He's dope. We just locked in the EP for him in June. It's M-Y-R-I-A-S. Shout out Mirius. He's a really good guy. He is doing all sorts of, he's got an EP on Ganja's label. I think he's doing something on Subtronic's label, but I think he's another guy who's gonna get pretty big this year.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We'll have to add him to our watch list.
Yeah, he's cool. Check him out.
That's one of the most rewarding parts, I feel like, of having a label, is discovering the artists and then giving them a platform and just kind of seeing them bloom into their full brand and their full potential.
Yeah, and that was kind of the whole reason why we started the label, because I was just unhappy at all the majors. Every major I was at, it's like, oh, they literally tell you exactly what to do on your songs. And it's like, they don't let you be an artist. Kind of sucks.
Yeah. But
that was the goal, is like, I want to be able to do what I want to do, but also help others who are kind of in my situation are trying to ascend through the ranks of DJs, which is so difficult today.
Yeah. And I mean, just navigating the industry in general, I feel like it's so fast paced and like at times it can be cutthroat, but there's just a lot to kind of like unwrap and digest, as we've seen. I mean, this episode's going to be focused mostly on the submitted questions that we got, kind of like how to break into the industry, all of that good stuff. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say and to share some of your wisdom here for everyone.
Yeah, hopefully I can help. I mean, that's the goal. I'm thankful to have great mentors along the way when I was coming up 10, 11, 12 years ago, which is crazy to say. But yeah, like being on Excision's tour bus in 2015 and 16, when I first started, I was like, oh, cool, you know, DJing, it's fun. And I didn't look at it like a business. And then being on a tour bus, living on a tour bus with Excision for 3 months, I was just like, dude, this is a business. By the time I left, I learned so much about everything. It's like, you have to treat it like a business. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I manage a bunch of artists. And that's kind of what our goal is, to look at it like a business, as if you were opening a burrito stand. Even if you have the best burritos, and this is a cool analogy for me, it's like, if you have the best burritos but nobody knows about it, nobody's gonna eat and buy your burrito. So how do you spread the word about your burritos? You know, it's like, you got to get it out there, you got to give people a taste, you got to let people know you're there.
Mm-hmm. I love that analogy.
Yeah, and it's hard, because the difference between when I was coming up versus today, there's probably like 20 times more artists that are trying to make it today versus 2000. What was that, like 2010, 11?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially after COVID, I feel like so many artists just came out of the woodwork. I'm like, yeah, everyone was just home making music, learning their craft, finding their sound. So
people had time. People had time.
People had time. That's for sure. And I mean, I don't even think Dubstep FBI would be where it is if COVID didn't happen.
Can we talk about how much you guys are killing it right now? I haven't been to a show in any part of the country in the last like year where I haven't seen one of you guys there. It's crazy. Like I was weird to have Beyond, and I was like, yes, he was like, what? I don't even understand. Like, what's going on? You're here.
Yeah. That's we're funny. Reviewing your application to be on the street team. So we'll get back to you.
Yeah, I'm down. I'll do anything you guys want. I'm on board. I want one of the crossbodies too.
Yes. Ooh. Like I said, send us your address and we'll send you one.
We got you.
I'll be in Colorado in like 3 weeks. So we'll link up.
Red Rocks. We actually have our first Red Rocks show of the year tonight. Mellow Death is playing.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. So fun. Yeah. And then the next one I think is your show or Vastiff's show with Sullivan. Mm-hmm.
Sweet. So, yes. We're going to announce Vastiff's next Denver show after that.
Ooh, perfect timing.
Yeah. Shout out Vastiff.
My guy, he was stuck on an airplane in Montreal this morning because of snow for like 2 hours.
I think I saw, Hamra was posting. He's like, I'm on my way to Tampa, but I'm here in the snow right now. So yeah, hopefully they can get on their flights.
I've got to go to Syracuse tomorrow, and I'm kind of sketched about it because I don't know if I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
It's supposed to snow like crazy up there.
I mean, flights around the country, like no matter where you're going. Our friend Austin is in Phoenix this morning, and his flight to Tampa got canceled, but it was due to like flight technical issues. So yeah, it's always something.
It's crazy.
Things we hate to see.
Yeah.
It happens though.
Well, yeah, this is different from our other episodes. Typically, you know, in the beginning we have conversations, but I figured, yeah, since we got so many questions, we can dive into this. And yeah, like Chrissy said, we're curious to hear what your take is on these and what advice you have to give to these people. So
Yeah. Chrissy and I were just talking and I was like, let's do another one and let's try to gear it towards helping. Like I said, I was thankful to have really great mentors that kind of pushed me in the right direction. And that's one of the questions I get a lot from people is like, how do I get a manager? How do I get an agent? How do I break through? How do I do this? And it's like, it's so hard to answer that on a DM, you know? So it's like, let's just do a whole podcast for an hour and let's just break it down. So it's like, the best way to do it. I'll hopefully give examples of Vastiff, how we got Vastiff going, how we got Morte going, how we got Perry Wayne going.
Yeah. Yeah. And if for anyone who wants to like skip through the episode, we'll be sure to add timestamps in the description so that you can check out what questions we asked RJ and you can just skip to that part if you don't want to watch the entire episode through. Yeah. Well, first one here from Mike Shift. He's asking, what are booking agents for and why don't most people book their own shows?
Well, that's kind of an easy question for me because when you're so focused on your brand, you need somebody has the connections in all the cities that can know every promoter and make a deal. The thing for me is the best reason why you have an agent, for example, like Vastiff is on Wasserman, Team Was, and they obviously have all the biggest artists, like not all the biggest, but you know, a majority of the biggest artists between Wasserman and UTA, and Wasserman books Subtronics, Level Up, Ride 10, Jessica Autofred, all those. So with Vastiff being on that agency, they already know every promoter across the country because they book Subtronics everywhere. They book Jessica Autofred everywhere, but also they can utilize those resources. So for example, Subtronics has a show and they'll just go through their roster of other artists on their roster essentially and say, okay, well, we have, you know, Riot 10 can play the show or Vastiff can play the show. So it's all just kind of like having the right people that knows the right promoters, because as we know, there's a lot of promoters who aren't necessarily have their stuff together. So if you don't have an agent and those promoters aren't vetted, so to speak, you can end up having a really bad show, which makes you look really bad. Then you don't get paid because people didn't show up. So the agents essentially have vetted all the right promoters, the proper promoters in every city to know that you can comfortably go there and that the show is going to properly be promoted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, in that same vein, like React is asking if you have any advice for people who don't have booking agents. So probably like more of the upcoming artists, how do they go about starting to play those shows and build those relationships if they don't have a booking agent?
Yeah. I think first and foremost that an artist needs to look at is like, they have to start going to local shows. Like say you live in Denver, you got to get to, you got to get to know Dom. You got to get to Dom does base ops. Obviously you guys know that, but the viewers might know that base ops has been around for 10 years. I don't know how long it's been around. It's been around forever. And I would say 80% of the dubstep acts that are touring have played that at one time or another coming up. So if you're a local Denver artist, then you have to go out in the scene and get to know it. Like obviously get to know the dubstep FBI people because you can plug them. It's all about networking. It's the same thing if you wanted to be a lawyer or a doctor. It's like you have to go and get the job essentially, and you have to network. You have to go in front of people, and then sort of once you play that base op stage, not stage but base op show, then you know you grow. But I think the biggest mistake a local artist will make is playing too many local shows and becoming known for a local artist.
That's an important point.
That's very important.
Yeah. Once you get known for a local artist, then every promoter in your city is just going to book you and be like, oh, he's local. He's a great local. He can do that. You have to think bigger than that. You just have to think, play the show, maximize the look of it on your social media. But you also have to be consistent. Like obviously consistency is the key for anything in life. Put out good music, make good posts. And unfortunately in today's world, you have to be a social media star essentially. I'm thankful it wasn't like that for me coming up, because I don't think I would have made it.
What tips? I'm glad you brought the local thing up, because that's something that, you know, we've always had conversations about that. Like, how do we make sure that, you know, an artist we manage, like Cheyenne, she lives in Denver. She's played a couple of Denver shows, but it's always like, how do you make sure that you're not seen as a local? Is it more than just shows? I know you mentioned socials and music. Like, how would you recommend kind of separating yourself as an artist from that local scene?
Yeah, like take Stryer, Michael, for example. I've been helping him out for a couple of years. I don't manage him anymore. But we have made it a point to play the right shows. Like he did my Mission Ballroom show in December. And then I think his last Denver play before that was my Red Rocks headline. And now he's got his own headline at Larimer coming up. So he didn't overuse himself in the market. It's hard. I know it's hard because you think the more shows you play, the better it's going to be because socials look good. But I just think going after the right social media plan, like I use Cranked At as the most perfect example.
He's amazing.
I know, but the crazy thing is, like, you know, him and Ray Volpe both were considering giving it up because
that's wild.
I remember that. Yeah.
Like Ray Volpe, because obviously he doesn't do what Cranked At does on social media, but Ray Volpe, everybody told him, you know, we're dropping you from your agency. His management didn't want him anymore. They told him, you know, you just don't have it. And then he hit Laserbeam, and now he's one of the most touring biggest artists. And same with Cranked At. Like he essentially pioneered that funny, like take a cool sound and make it. And now he's like selling out the Palladium in LA within 2 days. That's like 4,000 tickets. Like he's killing it.
Yeah. So, 2 months in advance too.
That's crazy. Wild. Ooh, I have the chills.
I know, it's crazy. It's so cool because obviously those guys are great guys and they deserve it, but it's always like you have to have the idea and the right team to put yourself in that position to win. And they both were in that position, but it took a little bit more. They had to essentially separate themselves from the rest of the pack. Like Ray made a hit that was not just a dubstep hit. It literally transcended all music for a time. Like you couldn't even go to a Tiesto set and not hear Laserbeam, you know? That's rare, but
pretty much every single genre of EDM, subgenre of EDM, you hear a remix of Laserbeam.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
And then obviously on the Cranked At side, like his music has always been good. Like he used to do this SoundCloud called Recranks. I don't know how long you guys have been around, but the Recranks were always sick. They were always in my set. And I always wonder, like, why isn't Cranked At so much bigger than he is? And then, you know, he just made that one little switch on social media, and now he's one of the biggest DJs. So it's, for me, like, let's take Perry Wayne for an example. I started managing him about a year ago, but we've been friends for a while. And I always thought he made some of the heaviest dubstep around. I was like, I love it, but he's, from all the conversations we would have, he's like, I'm just not sticking. I'm not growing. And I said, dude, like, no offense, but you're just a white guy making dubstep. What are you doing to separate yourself from all the other million people who are making dubstep? And so that's how he came up with the Wayne Enterprises and does all the yeah. blood. And like, you know, he's on his first headline tour right now, which is amazing. And now
I'll be seeing him this weekend in Albuquerque.
Oh, nice. That's fun. And now, like, now that he's starting to get the traction because of the brand, I'm really having him focus on more meaningful music. And that's another great point for artists, is that they think it's more about quantity, but it's more about quality. Like, artists think, oh, if I put out 30 tunes mm-hmm. in a year, it's, you know, I'll grow, which probably, yes, that's the case. But if you put out one laser beam in the whole year, then obviously laser beam is like the exception. But mm-hmm. if you just put out memorable music instead of focusing on the quantity. So now Perry is really taking his music, really looking for that vocal, something that's catchy, something that people are going to sing, and something that's going to be memorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, I was going to say, like, to your point about the memorable music that tells a story. I mean, that's huge when artists come to us and they're like, hey, I'd like to pitch my song for you for coverage. And then I come back and I say, okay, you know, does this tell a story at all? What's the creative inspiration behind it? Has it been supported by other artists? And then it's hard for us to want to cover a song that has no story or no meaning, you know, where they're just like, oh, well, I just whipped this out in my studio in a week and I needed to release it. Like, there's no yeah. story behind that. So to your point, not only does it help with the brand and the longevity, but it also helps other people get interested in your music.
Yeah. And I think just throwing a splice, like, vocal sample that everybody else has used onto like your pre-drop vocal, it could be a cool song and other DJs might rinse it because of the drop. But like, you look at, I mean, look at Ray Volpe, for example. Like, prior to Laserbeam, he had great music, but it wasn't as memorable. And now look at all the singles that he's released since Laserbeam. You've got the one right now. Like, literally, I hear that song and I'm just like, I'll be in the shower. I'm like, drop, 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 right? Because it's so memorable.
Yeah.
Or like the happy song. This song makes me really happy. Exactly. Like, yeah. It just takes a little creativeness on top of your like production. And that's the thing that I'm really having Perry Wayne focus on. It's like, okay, you obviously nailed all the drops. You can make drops with the best of them, but now let's bring out a more creative side to where you have a song that everybody's going to sing. And he has a song that we're going to put out that I literally play it. And like 3 days later, I'm just like, dude, I'm still singing this song. So it's good. That's, you know, and that's, I look at it like stages, like as all my artists that I manage were going in stages, like Vastiff, for example, he was struggling with becoming known and, you know, he's been around for years. And I don't remember how we linked up for Root Service, but we did an EP like very early on with Root Service 3 years ago. And I was like, dude, I got to manage this guy. And at that point, I wasn't even really trying to be a manager. So, you know, we talked, and now because of what Sullivan King is doing on his tour with Avenged, mm-hmm. now mm-hmm. like we're already looking at Vastiff as like, he's the next artist that's going to transcend just dubstep, and he's going to have a full band and he's going to sing and he's going to do mm-hmm. all that. So what do? We need to create vocals that are meaningful and that relate to his fan base. Like, one of the craziest things I tell people is like Taylor Swift. Let's take Taylor Swift. I know she's not an EDM artist, but she has the craziest fan base. 30-year-old girls. Like, I don't know one 30-year-old girl that wouldn't pay $5,000 to go see her play. Why? Mm-hmm. But okay, but why?
I'm not 30, because, I'm 29.
Because she sings about her life and her breakups and her hardships and what is every other girl her age going through, the same shit.
Yeah, it's relatable.
And that's why they love it, because they go and say, wow, this girl is feeling the same feelings that I'm having. And that's a big thing about dubstep, is like, we all just want to go and rage and have fun and party. So for Vastiff, it's like, he needs to start singing about his experiences and make them memorable. Like, he's starting to do that a little bit over the last couple EPs, but, you know, he's selling out all of his shows on this first tour, but it's like, every day I tell them, cool, you sold out Darkstar in Phoenix and it's a 400 cap, but what are we going to do to go back and sell out the 1,000 cap? Mm-hmm. And it's just every step along the way gets harder, because the bigger you get, the harder it is to separate yourself. Because, you know, I tell everybody, it's like, I get to headline Lost Lands, but I have to play up against Subtronics, and everybody literally leaving my stage to go to Subtronics. But, you know, it's like you have to deal with your, I don't want to say competition, because I tell everybody not to obviously compete or like measure yourself against everybody else, but you know, it's just harder. That's the reason why Subtronics is who he is, because he's put in the work and he's got the fan base.
And he's just some dude who likes to smoke weed and
exactly. Relatable. It's relatable. Yeah. 100%.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, actually let's move on to some other questions here. We have so many, so I'm like, looking at the list here. No, it's a great conversation so far.
Also, like your Rockies hat, today's opening day.
I know, always.
Go Rockies, this is our year.
We're talking about going to a game before Red Rocks, if you guys are interested. Ooh, we might all, because I think the game's at 1, and I think Vassiv is playing like 7 or 8 at Red Rocks, so we'll have time fun. If you guys are interested.
I could be down.
Yeah, I'm down. I live like 5 blocks from the field.
I miss going to those games.
We need to go to one.
Yeah.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, this one question right here from I Am the Astronaut. What's the best way to go about getting a manager?
I mean, it's the same thing as an agent. You just have to make yourself attractive, like play shows, have cool music, have cool releases, just have a cool brand. I think one mistake that a lot of the kids make, I shouldn't call them kids, artists, is that they think their music is cool and that's all they focus on. But in today's climate, you have to have cool music, cool brand, cool socials. So I think don't overlook your brand. Like some of the biggest artists in the world have the coolest brands. And I always say that, like, you know, Jaws was such a force for the last decade. And his brand was cool. He had a shark. And, you know, I look at artists that don't necessarily have a brand that I think, oh, they could have been so much bigger. But, you know, they just have cool music. So I just think you just have to make yourself more attractive to same agents and managers.
And I've heard, you know, some people be like, you shouldn't be finding your manager. They'll find you. Definitely. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that. Like I makes with sense. Your help, Chrissy, I just picked up Pony. Mm-hmm. I found her, even though she had released on Phase One's label, and I saw her EP and I saw her brand, I saw her look, I was like, gosh, this artist is going to be huge if she just has, you know, the right steps in place. So I was trying to reach out to her and I couldn't. And then I actually got connected by you, Chrissy. So that's, yeah, I think a lot of it is me finding them. I've had a lot of artists reach out to me to be managed, and I haven't really picked anyone up in that way. So I think that's good.
Yeah. It's also like something that we always say is you attract what you put out. So like the energy that you put into the world, like if you always have a positive outlook on things and you're always looking for new opportunities and you believe in yourself and you clap for yourself, I feel like you will attract those kinds of people and those kinds of things in your life. So, you know, as an artist, like you got to clap for yourself first. Let's be real. Like not everyone's just going to sit there and always cheer you on, but if they see you really excited about your project, then they'll be more likely to get excited too. So I think maintaining that energy is really important.
Well, yeah, 100%. That's what I've told all of my artists that are on their first like headline tours. Like you have to make your show look like it's the funnest show and that you're so excited, which they are, which, you know, we are, but because that energy is, 100%. Like people respond to that energy. And it's the same, like you just said, for an artist that's up and coming who doesn't play shows. Cause it's always hard. The biggest question I get is, how do I post on social media if I'm not playing shows? Mm-hmm. And one thing, like let's take Vassiv, for example, he's switching his social media strategy because he's been playing shows. Like he was on the Sullivan King tour. He has his own tour. So now he's been posting photos and video of him playing in front of big crowds, but now people sort of accept that he's already there. Mm-hmm. So they don't engage as much when he posts the big shows in front of the big crowds because they've already seen it. So now he's having to find like different ways to come up with continuing to post on social media because he's sort of already at that plateau. Mm-hmm. So it's, I just think like social media, I hate that I stress that the most because obviously I would like to think good music would be the,
yeah.
But it's hard. It's you have to be known. You have to look at yourself as a product.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, obviously if you come out and make a hit, then that's very rare. And that's an exception to get big. But a lot of the artists that like Jessica Otterfred or Riot 10 or, you know, all these artists have been around for years before you've heard of them. Mm-hmm. You just have heard of them since they've sort of made that break to get past their local status. Cause like, for example, I'm not going to name whose tour I was on because of certain things, but I was on a tour in 2014 and I was the opener of a national tour on a bus, and Riot 10 Chris was the local opener in El Paso.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And like, you know, I was right after him. I was essentially I was the first
support.
So I was, you know, still early just as him, and we became friends, and I just like watched him sort of do his thing, and he's just started, you know, and now obviously he's still one of the biggest 10 years later, and it's cool to see that. Like Wooly, same example. Like mm-hmm. I met Wooly when he was going by a different name in Buffalo, and he was just a local artist, and we became friends, and now he's probably one of the most poppin' DJs there is.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned like the decade ago, 2014 era where people started, because we got a submitted question from Frogor, and he's asking what's changed the most in the industry since you started your project. And if you have any advice for newcomers in the scene.
Yeah. I think the thing that's changed is the social media game. Like I said, back in 10 years ago, we didn't really have, I mean, we had social media, but it wasn't like you had to make yourself look mm-hmm. cool and do all this, you know, things yeah, that you're known reels, for
TikToks, engagement farming.
And I think obviously the other big change is that there's a lot more people trying to do what we're doing, but also the shows are a lot bigger. Like when I first came up, dubstep was still in the dark, which I love. Like, you know, I'm mm-hmm. I'm from that era. Like I think about that era as like we played in dark, dingy clubs where there's literally water condensation falling off the ceiling, which is like 6 inches higher than my head. Mm-hmm. And every time I jump, I'm hitting, and there's people like literally, like I look over and there's people like over the decks. And now, like, you know, dubstep, like Excision and Subtronics are on freaking arena tours right now. So it's obviously become a lot more commercial. And I know some people don't like that, but I think it's cool. Like, I think there's a lot of artists that are still pushing our scene forward, which is cool. And it's just grown. I think there's a lot more opportunities today for somebody who's trying to make it versus when I made it, because there was, you know, Excision at that point, he was the biggest. I'm not going to name the other names that were really big back then, but Excision was one of the biggest, and he was playing, you know, like the Ogden. Like we did a Denver show on that tour in 2015 or 16, and he played First Bank. So it was like, okay, that was like the, by far the biggest show on that tour. So 6,000. So a lot of the venues were like Stereo Live in Dallas, which is like, everybody plays that now. But back then it was like unheard of for a dubstep artist to play Stereo Lives. So
yeah, and now like the Kia Forum is becoming the new normal for these dubstep artists.
It's crazy. Like Palladium, mm-hmm. Palladium in LA was the biggest LA show that Excision played on our tour. And that's like 3,500 people.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it was that small.
Yeah, I mean, that was huge though. Like I was walking into these rooms like, dude, I'm nervous. Like this is crazy. And now I walk into those rooms, I'm like, what? This is small. I don't even know how I ever thought that was like, but then that's just the, you know, a testament to how big the scenes got. So I think the best answer is like, you have so many more opportunities today because there's, I don't even want to say dubstep, there's just bass shows. Like drum and bass is making such a great, I don't want to say comeback because it's, you know, it's been up and down, but it's, I feel like this time is very different. And I'm looking at a lot of the festivals that are yet to announce, like Bass Canyon, they're, you know, a lot of them are going they're having like drum and bass stages now, and, you know, not just dubstep. So it's cool. I think mm-hmm. the time now is like, it's almost better to be more of like a multi genre, like open, not, I don't want to say open format bass, so to speak, you know, just do what they love.
Absolutely. EDM Elephant is wondering, if you were to do it all over again, would you go with the same name? And has using your name made it more difficult or easier to market yourself?
I don't think it made it either difficult. I think the funny part is that a lot of people confuse it with the Bear Grylls of the Discovery Channel world.
Yeah.
And a lot of, oh, yeah.
I was just gonna say my parents. My mom's like, oh, you're hanging out with Bear Grylls now? What? She's like, it's you, Shaq, and Bear Grylls, I guess.
That's funny. Yeah, that'd be the one thing that was funny. But one thing I wanted to mention also about how it's changed real quick is the mm-hmm. agents. Like back when I first started, we had Circle Talent Agency, and that was legit the only dubstep agency in the world. And I shouldn't say the world, because I'm sure some people would be mad at that, because there probably were others. But now that you fast forward 10 years from now, it's like UTA, who's one of the biggest in the world, has a full, you know, bass music division. And so does Wasserman. You have Corson Agency. You've got AB Touring. You've got a lot of agencies. So back then it was like maybe 5 agents in the US that were booking dubstep, and now it's like, yeah. I don't even know how many.
Yeah, there's gotta be like probably.
Yeah, so that's a big difference. So there's a lot more opportunities, and I think what is also great is that a lot of these big agencies are very hungry, looking for those next artists. So if you mm-hmm. make yourself attractive, it's like, you know, like Wasserman, for example, just picked up Vulgar. They picked up Victim. They picked up Sanzu and a lot of them. Yeah, and yeah. I just had Vulgar at my first tour show in Seattle, and I just met them for the first time. And they're actually really nice guys. And it kind of sucks that all the Rhythm kids are wearing these masks, because I feel like they should show their faces and be known. I don't know. Coming from experience, it's hard.
Yeah. And yeah. One more point with the agents. I mean, I got to give a special shout out to Jake Bernstein, because I know he's one of those people who is meticulously in the scene looking for new talent.
Yeah.
And it really shows, just like the way that he curates some lineups and like the way that he interacts with the scene. I just feel like he's always been having an eye out for artists that he believes in and that he can kind of help give that hand up to help get them to the next level. So that means a lot to people like us too, who manage the upcoming artists. And we know that the booking agents, they kind of get it. Like, they want to reward people who are chasing their dreams and that upcoming talent. So yeah, I appreciate that.
They've done, I have so much love for them, because they've done so much for Vastiv. It's insane. Like, we decided to go with Wasserman with Jake and Nick, and within 7 days, his first tour that he's on right now was like booked. And it was just like, you know, a lot of agents are a lot of people. And that's another thing I want to bring up, is that a lot of people overpromise. And if you start talking, like if you're an up and coming DJ and you hear a manager or an agent say, oh, we're going to make you this, we're going to make you that, and you don't let people overpromise you and don't get excited. It's a long process, and it's very difficult, and nobody can see the future. It's just all about hard work. If somebody comes to you and says, I'm gonna make you the next Subtronics, like just know, like, you don't.
But don't you mess. Make yourself the next Subtronics, really.
Exactly. And that's a big misconception of management as well. It's like, I think a lot of artists just think that, oh, if I get a good manager, I'm gonna become the next Subtronics. And it's not what the manager can do, it's about what you can do. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, I look at an agent like a salesperson, right? If you're selling pens and you just have a pen that's the same pen as everybody else, they're not going to sell these pens. But if you have the new cool pen, then they're going to be able to sell that. So it's the same that relates to artists. Like, if you go on and you get signed to an agent, and like, for example, my agent, Max Freeman, he's got Excision. He's, you know, he's Excision's agent. Unfortunately, they look at artists like a money symbol, right? Because why spend all your time booking ABC artists for $500 when they're only making 10%, when you could book Excision for X amount, whatever he makes. I don't know what he makes, you know, and make all that money. So you have to sort of make yourself attractive to make yourself different, because all these big agents, they've already got artists that are making them so much money. So they're not going to give you the time of day unless they see the value in the future of you. And that's kind of how you create yourself and your net worth and your value, I guess.
Better prove that you can sell tickets first and foremost.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's
a big difference from soft ticket to hard ticket. And for those of you who don't know, a soft ticket is essentially a show like Base Ops, for example, is every Friday night. Mm-hmm. So that's considered, that's considered a soft ticket play, because people are going to show up to Vinyl Nightclub. That's where Base Ops is every Friday, regardless of who's playing. And then if it does really well, sells out, that's because the artist who's playing. But there's always a X amount of people who are going to show up. But if you do the Ogden Theater in Denver, which is like 1800 people, that's called a hard ticket, because people are showing up specifically for you on a specific night that you're there, because they don't do a weekly show.
That's interesting. I actually had never heard of those terms before, but I knew the difference between each.
So you want to build yourself as a hard ticket, because there's not soft ticket shows all across the country. Like if you go to, I know Seattle has some, like Oregon, I'm trying to think of a city like that doesn't have, like Chicago, for example. Mm-hmm. Like you do the Concord Theater, which is like 1400 cap. That's considered a hard ticket show. So they don't really have any soft ticket plays. So it's easy. The soft ticket plays are easy. It's a layup, like Church, for example, on Thursdays in Denver. That's a soft ticket play. It's easy. So when you switch and you start actually selling hard tickets, that's where you make a lot of money.
Consume Dubs, what is the idea behind Bad News Bears?
That was actually my agent's idea. He wanted to call it the Dub, like Bear Grylls and the Cubs. And I didn't want that, because I don't want it to be just about me. I wanted it to be about all the amazing artists that are kind of coming up that I manage and that are on my label. I think you guys were actually there when we did the Root Service show at the Ogden. And yeah, it's kind of like, it was kind of stemmed from that. It was like, how do we give the artists that I manage and the artists that are coming up on my label a bigger platform to like help them? Like, you know, for example, Thunderdome, Morte, Vastiv, Perry Wayne, and Jaqui all have never played Thunderdome. And I had a, you know, cool slot on Sunday night. So we decided to do a Bad News Bears and let them come out and showcase some stuff and help them get more exposure that way. Because the thing is, like, if you could, I don't want to say attached because that's kind of a negative word, but if you can sort of become in with another known DJ, the biggest thing for me is like, there's no difference from a producer who's here and there, right? Like, so Excision is not a better producer than Perry Wayne, or Perry Wayne's not better. It's just that the idea and the perception of who Excision is makes him the biggest DJ in the world, as far as we're concerned in our, you know, in our community. So how do you up the perception of yourself? Like when people hear your name or see you, how do you let them think of you in that same light as like, oh, he's, you know, he's as Perry Wayne, he's like headlining, he's doing, you know, playing all this. You have to up that perception. So for me, like being on the Excision tour and then PK Sound, you guys know what PK Sound is. I know they're not really around because they sort of got bought out, but like the PK Sound boys like loved me. We became friends and I became associated with Excision, who was at that time one of the biggest DJs. So immediately when someone saw Excision, they saw my name next to him, and I sort of elevated my perception of what people thought of me because I was hanging with Excision. So for me, it's like now that I sort of have a status as a headliner as Bear Grylls, I want to bring those artists up and let the community see, oh, you know, because they're so awesome. Like Jaqui, all of them, they're all amazing producers. They're all amazing people in their own right. It's just, you know, you have to get in front of the right people and you have to sort of be seen in that light. And that's kind of why we're doing that.
Yeah. And I think like the point you're making about who you're seen with and stuff like that, that kind of applies to getting out of the local scene too, where it's like, you know, you could get an offer for you to open doors again at, you know, the club down the street, but you might not want to take that because it doesn't it's not the look that you want, you know. It's like you have to be strategic with how you appear on paper too, which is really important.
Yeah, like Perry Wayne, for example, he lives in Dallas, and a lot of artists obviously go through Dallas, and he'll send his music to them, and then he'll go hang out with them, and he sort of networks. And that's how you do it. Like, he goes and he went, you know, I don't want to say he's got collabs with a lot of the people, because that's it's hard, like, when you just reach out online and say, hey, let's collab. But if you go and like you vibe with that person and you're cool with them and you become friends, it's a lot easier to sort of to get that stuff.
Showing face is huge.
Yeah. And don't like I laugh because a lot of local people will be like overzealous about it. And you know how it is. Like, they just, they don't really realize that they're sort of being annoying. I hate to use that word, but like, they're very persistent. Let's use that word. And at a certain point, it's like, after, you know, I'm very busy. Send me your music. I'll listen to it. If I like it, I'll respond and say, you know, that's cool. But if you just keep every day or every other day, like, you get to a point where it's sort of like a little too much, like overzealous. And then that artist will sort of just block you out, because you have to remember that all these artists are touring. They're so busy. They're trying to live normal lives. So it's like a thin line between like being overzealous with it.
I appreciate you for bringing that up, because Chrissy and I deal with that every day at Ducks API of artists constantly, like, just constantly reaching out to us and saying like, hey, did you get a chance to listen to this? Hey. And then they'll message our personals like, hey, I emailed it to your exec at Ducks API. I sent your contact form. And it's just like, I will get to it when I have the chance, but I have 100 other inquiries that are also coming in that I need to tend to, and paid coverage. Like, please be patient with us.
Yeah. You know? I have people who will hit my Twitter, my Bear Grylls Instagram, my personal Instagram, my Facebook account that doesn't have anything to do with Bear Grylls. I don't even know how they find it.
They found your personal.
It's like, all right, like, I got to give it to them.
It's like, dude, right, that's there. Great. Okay. And then they'll email me. I'm like, my email's not out there. I don't know how. And at that point, I just like, I block it out, because I'm like, I can't. Like, if you do it, you know, reach out once. And if they respond, cool. If not, like I said, go to a show, become associated with the promoters, and then the promoters will plug you. Or, you know, just it's hard, because they're not like malicious about it. They're just hungry, which I get.
Closing point on that one is like, realize that you're also not owed a response by anyone too. Like, don't think that you're entitled to a response from people. So
yeah, that's a hard one. I get people who get angry. It's like, oh, you can't respond to me. I'm like, I can't. I'm sorry. Like,
no,
you know, we have personal lives and things that I try to block out from that. Like, I manage 8 DJs, I run a label, I tour. It's like, I'm busy. I try as hard as I can, but you can't please everybody.
Yeah. And also too, don't be that person to send us music and say, and if we say that, you know, maybe we're interested, don't tell us like, okay, well, we will release it the date that works for you. Like, we're not a label. Just give us a release date. Don't be asking us to put a release date for you.
For sure. And one thing I also want to bring up, and I see a lot of local DJs do that. They compare themselves to other DJs, but also shit on DJs who are bigger than them. It's like, I don't know why XYZ is so big. His music is mid, or blah, blah, blah. It's like, you do that, the entire music industry is going to shut you out. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Like, we support everybody. Like, I'm happy that all my friends who are bigger than me and, you know, doing better things, I'm happy for them.
Yeah,
I'm not going to ever sit here and like badmouth any other artists. They all struggled at one point, I'm sure. And they all figured out a way to make themselves who they are. You can't knock that. This is a cutthroat, hard industry. For anybody to make anything of themselves is difficult. So you can't knock that. Sorry.
And like, people don't want to work with someone who's always negative online either. Like, I wouldn't go near certain people with a 10-foot pole because they just talk shit about other people on Twitter. So
yeah,
that's, be careful that's a, what you say.
Yeah, that's a big no-no. Like, definitely big no-no.
Things we hate to see.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Chrissy.
Sorry, I was just going to move into, we got a couple questions about DJs who don't produce yet and how they can earn opportunities to perform as an opener or at their local club scene.
Yeah, I mean, I actually know who you're speaking about. It's a gentleman from Saskatoon. He's asked me, that's difficult. I think, the same thing applies, to be honest, like just go in. You have to figure out. So say you live in Saskatoon. I know I'm not supposed to announce, but that's part two of my tour. Anyway, so you go and you just become friends with the promoters and you become friends with the people who run the venue, you become friends with everybody in the scene in your city. And that's how the opportunities arise. I can't stress that enough, is like networking is the thing. If you know, any other job, it's the same thing. You got to network yourself. You have to be well connected. People like big businessmen don't get to where they are by not knowing people. It's like, if I have a problem, say, oh man, I need to do this. I know who to call because I'm networked, because I've been around for so long and I've met everybody. And one thing I will say that I tell all my artists and that I do myself is when I get to the venue, I tell everybody, thank you for having me. And I make it a point to meet everybody that's involved with that show. Even, you know, I'll even like fist bump the security guards and say, thank you for doing your job, for protecting us. Like, yeah. You know, it's a whole effort on so many different levels, and you have to make yourself memorable. And I get so many people who always say like, I can't believe you're hanging out at this show. Like most other artists, they just go straight to the green room, play the show and leave. And it's so cool that you're hanging out. It's like, yeah, because we're networking. Like this is a business and this is a job. Mm-hmm. It's a cool business. And like, I love, you know, I get to play music for a living, but you still have to take the time to get to know everybody and shake hands, basically. So all my artists, we do that.
I mean that converts to merch sales, streams, like that converts to everything, you know. Yeah. It's invaluable, really.
Yeah, and it's like what Chrissy always says, like it's easy to forget what someone says to you, but you'll never forget how someone made you feel.
100%.
So I love that you do that. 100%. And also too, like it's all about what you put out into the world. If you're putting out negative energy, then don't be surprised when you receive that back. I was going to say, it's all about having gratitude as well. I've been trying to make an effort to like wake up in the mornings and like just tell myself like 5 to 10 things that I'm grateful for that morning. Yeah. Instead of just thinking right away of like all the work that I have to do for that day, just wake up and like, wow, I'm alive. I'm healthy today. I get to drink my coffee. I get to go to my job. I get to walk to my desk in my living room and start working. I have a stable income. Yeah. Like I have amazing friends. I have an amazing family. Just little things that we take for granted, just learning to have more gratitude, and all of that will start coming back to you.
100%. It's great. I do the same thing at night. I do mine at night before I go to bed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think another thing, like, I don't know how I can make this pertain to up and coming DJs, but a lot of times, like for me, if I have a flight right after my show and I can't stick around and talk to people, I get hate for that. It's like, oh, you didn't stick around. You don't love your fans. Like a lot of times it just doesn't happen. Like I can't get there early because my flights are delayed or my flights are late. So that's another thing for local DJs. Like I love to do that. Like I'll go out in the crowd and I'll meet people and they ask me questions like, oh, I've never seen, you know, CDJ 3000s before. And I'll bring them up and I'll just show them. And like, I did this to a guy in Philadelphia, and every time I come to Philadelphia, like he's the guy, he always messaged me. I can't wait. Like, thanks again. Like you really helped me set that path. And that's what I believe. Like I said, I have such great mentors, like Terra Vita boys. They're not really around anymore, but they're around in the music scene, obviously. Like one of them is running all of EDC now. And the other one is Adventure Club's tour manager, but they were like big brothers for me. They showed me, they took me in and showed me the ropes. And I always try to pay that forward and give it back to all the smaller artists that are trying to come up. And I think, you know, it should trickle down. I feel like more people need to help each other, but.
How do upcoming artists go about finding a mentor then?
I don't know.
Just networking.
Get lucky, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I guess. Yeah, I got lucky. They found me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really believe, like, as corny as it sounds, your network is your net worth. Like,
yeah, 100%.
Dude, literally. I mean, that's how we just got the Rampage show. Like,
that's, I know, I saw, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's how I had my job with Blazy Susan. Literally, Chrissy and I just went to a church nightclub show and we met the CEO and became good friends. And we were literally just smoking a joint, hanging out. And I hit him up on Instagram and told him I was looking for a job in sales. And here we are. That's it. Years
later. Everything is happens because of networking.
It does.
You have to put yourself in the right position. Like, you have to be ready too. Like, if you're trying to be a producer, but you haven't, you know, sort of finished any good music and you meet somebody, then it's the wrong time. It has to be the right time as well. That's a, like, another big key. Like, for me, it was just because I played a show in Calgary at a club called Republic back in like 2014. I was opening for Terra Vita, and Terra Vita was really connected with all the PK Sound guys, and they took me in, and that's because that's how I got Excision. Like, that, like that whole Canadian crew, Terra Vita is not Canadian, but they're OG, and they come from that, you know, that time. And that's how I just sort of kept making these connections all the way up to getting on Excision's tour. And that was my break for sure. Almost nice. 10 years ago.
Very cool.
Laser Show wants to know, what are your guidelines and requirements when signing an artist to Root Service, and what do you look out for the most?
There's no guideline. I just, Chris, who is sort of like my label manager, A&R, he runs the demos email, and he'll send me stuff that like, he's sort of the first filter. And I know when he sends me something, we're like, oh, cool. This is like the Mirius, for example. He's so dope. Sick. He sent me and I listened to it. And I was like, I already know I'm going to like it because you sent it. And yeah. So there's really no guidelines. I think I hate to hear music that just sounds regurgitated like everybody else's music. I think that's first and foremost, like, just try to make yourself sound original. Try not to use too many samples that everybody out, like Virtual Riot samples. I know it's kind of funny because everybody uses Virtual Riot samples, but I just, like, you have to stand out. I don't know how. There's no, like, surefire way to have a guideline. It's like, how do you stand out? You just have to stand out. I don't know how else to say it. Make yourself
be yourself, though.
Yeah, different. Yeah,
stay true to yourself.
Yep.
That's another thing too. Like, I see some artists, they'll try to change up their sound to try to please, like, what they think the crowd wants or what the audience wants. And it's like, no, just stay true to your sound and you'll attract fans and they will follow you and they will want to keep listening to you because they like your sound. So don't try to change it up.
I had that discussion with Bastib yesterday, actually, because he's going to really get it more into songwriting and get more into, you know, himself. And I said, look, you've already built the database. They're going to love what you put out because you've already made a connection with them. And he really is trying, like, we have a goal on paper, Red Rocks 2027. That's the goal. I know it's like 4 years, 3 years, 3 years away, but like,
it's attainable. You have to. I know it's going to happen.
You have to set it.
You have to set the
goals. Yeah. So you have to set that goal. That's the goal.
It's like us, ever since 2020, we've been saying we wanted to do a festival stage takeover. You have to say it. You have to believe that it's going to happen. Write it down. Tell it to people. That's how you make your dreams come true. And then you show up every day, even though there's low lows and high highs. You show up every single day and you put in the work.
Yeah. So are you guys both going to head out to Rampage?
Yeah. Yeah,
we're gonna send it.
Yeah, we have Morte and Bastip playing both.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, do you know what days they're playing?
Not off the top of my head, I don't think. But I'm sure they'll be happy that you guys are out there.
Yeah, we wish we could stay longer, but Jesse has a trip to South America this month, and then I'm going to Europe next month, so it's gonna be in and out.
You guys need to change your name to Worldwide Dubstep FBI now.
International. I swear, FBI.
You guys are always everywhere. Like, you travel more than I do. It's crazy. Yeah.
We just love traveling. We're not getting enough of it.
Me too.
But yeah, this time it's for pleasure. No music involved. I'm gonna try to meet Soul Valiant. I don't know if you know of him.
Oh yeah.
He lives in Peru, so I'm gonna try to meet up with him for dinner one of the nights.
Dope. Yeah, that's cool. He's a guy that's sort of up and coming.
Oh yeah, we love his stuff.
Everybody mentions him all the time when I'm always like, who should we sign? That's like one of the top
he's cool.
top artists. Yeah.
We just have a couple of fun, quick ones. I'll just run through. The Mad Villain, he said, not a question, but thank you for bringing Sanzu to LA in May.
Orange County, but yeah.
Yeah.
That one's going to be fun. It's got Vasted back-to-back Resurrect and Victim back-to-back Sanzu.
Ooh, that's going to be
sick. That's hot.
The Bass Rush show would be fun.
Yeah.
Laser Show, anything special planned for Bass Camp in July?
Not yet. I don't think that's till like August, or I haven't really thought that far ahead, but that should be fun. I know I'm closing out the second stage of the Bass stage. So that's going to be fun. I've never done that one before.
It looks like a fun fest. I like the flyer too.
Yeah, it's beautiful out there.
If you could pick, so Alan, AKA DJ Buckethead, he's asking if you could pick a new DAW to use, what would it be?
Oh no, maybe FL Studio. I have no idea. I know I saw that comment actually. I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, that's a hard funny one. GarageBand, you know?
Fruity Loops, OG Fruity Loops.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's what FL, but like the original version was so bad back in like 2005 or whatever it was. Ugh.
You know, it would be funny if you tried playing a set with the FBI handcuffs. You just tried playing a set with
them. I'm down. I could do that.
You are?
Maybe. We'll do it at home for like 10 minutes.
We could make a whole scenario out of it for TikTok, like bust down your door before you play, like you're wanted right now, put you in handcuffs, and then you just run off.
Down. You have to like grab the microphone and everything and talk with
them. Yeah, I'm down. I think I could do it.
That would be some good content.
I'll practice.
We'll send you a test pair.
Yeah, we'll practice for sure. That's funny.
What kind of CDJs do you have?
They're the white limiteds 3000s.
I saw that. Yeah, the white ones. Those are clean.
This is a map of everywhere I've played in the world and been.
I love that you keep track of that.
I don't know if you can see here. Let's get closer. So the gold pins are for places that I've actually played in the world. That's like the US. And then like you can see.
Wow.
That's all
Mongolia.
I played Mongolia. I remember
that Mongolia festival that you told us about.
Yeah, so that's China and then Australia down there. And cool. Yeah, so I keep track of everywhere that I've played and been.
Is there a place that you haven't played at that you would love to play in?
No, I don't think so. I think
like
I've played everywhere.
South America maybe, or like, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I've played Argentina and I've played Chile. And those were cool. I got offered to play like Russia and India, but I don't really have a desire to go to those places.
I don't think I want to go to Russia either.
Not right now.
Yeah, I mean,
India,
done like
Vietnam. Maybe, but even then,
it's just
kind
hard.
Of a stretch.
It's just so crowded there. Like it's Thailand. Yeah. Like a lot of parts of Asia are like that too. Like Thailand. I was 2 miles away from the festival. Wait, I'm sorry, 4 miles away from the festival. It took me 2 hours to get there.
Sounds like Mexico City.
I know. It's like, can't deal with that.
Jeez. Yeah, I would go to Russia, obviously not now with all of the conflicts going on, but there's a festival called Alpha Future People out there. And it looks so cool. Like the main stage just has like alien like heads on it. It looks like futuristic, like robot heads, and the production looks really cool.
Sick. Yeah.
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 Scary times in the world.
No, seriously. Well, that's really all we have. I mean, is there anything we didn't cover that you want everyone to know?
I don't think so. I just think, like we said, just keep it positive, try to be different, and consistency is the key.
Mm-hmm. That's why network.
Network too. Mm-hmm. Man, look at what you guys have been able to do. You know, you guys, like every festival, you meet somebody and you just keep, you know, it's the same in life. It's the same for everything. I just think people overcomplicate it because they think it's music and it's a DJ, but yeah, you have to be cool. But like I said, if you were a salesperson selling a product, your product has to be cool and different and innovative and, you know, got to get the word out. It's the same thing.
Exactly.
Yep. Clap for yourself too. Be proud of how far you've come.
Yeah.
And celebrate the small wins.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing I struggle with. Like whenever I take time, I'm like, I can't believe I played in freaking, you know, all these places. I look at that. And that's why I have that, because it's so humbling. Like I just, it's so humbling to think that I've been to all those places to play music. It's cool.
Yeah.
Music has super taken inspiring. You all over the world.
It's crazy.
Love it. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us again.
Of course. Thank you. You guys are too busy traveling to.
This is like our only day we could squeeze you in. I know. Lunch break is over.
Blowing up. Dubstep FBI blowing up.
Yeah. Let's go. Yeah. Hopefully we'll catch you in person. Oh, yeah. April.
Yeah. No, it's been really cool to see Dubstep FBI grow to what it's become. Like, it's thank really you. Cool.
Thank you.
So yeah. It's inspiring. It's cool. Now you got merch, so you make some money off of it. And
yeah.
That's cool. No, it's honestly really cool. You guys are one of the biggest, I think, that are the only that are doing it. That's cool.
Yeah. We consider you a mentor too. So we appreciate all the advice that you've given us, and also just opportunities like having us out at the Ogden to do interviews and, you know, just believing in the music that we send you and stuff like that. It means a lot. So right back at you.